For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
At Tanger Outlets, find all the best brands all on sale every day. Step into the season's newest arrivals and save big on the styles you love. Shop Under Armour, Michael Kors, Crocs, and more. With up to 70% off, plus an extra 25% off for a limited time. Hurry in for amazing deals from the brands you love. Only at Tanger Outlets.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of life, the work of Triple H.
We want to smack down.
Hi, Neil.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Just want to check in with you. How was the first 20 minutes of the show?
Excellent. A roundup of all the news that's fit to print.
Yes.
or broadcast.
If you're joining us now on the free feed, man, you're missing some excellent news coverage. Me and Neil putting our heads together, making sense of the world of professional wrestling, from legal stories to New Japan Cup to Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, all that's fit to discuss here on the XL edition of Rewind to SmackDown. Neil is here with me as it is the Great Waiting's 21st birthday. So we are giving him the night off as he will be he will be returning on Monday. So we give him the weekend off.
Happy birthday, Tinger.
Yes. I'm very curious what he is up to. Probably just hammered by now, I would assume.
I think so, yeah.
By this point.
Speaking of, John, I know that you sort of, from this week's talk, you didn't indulge too much in the alcohol while you were on vacation. But at this point, it must seem like the vacation's very much in the rearview mirror because, I mean, you had a pay-per-view, you had Raw, interview with Scott D'Amore, Rewind to Dynamite.
Oh, yeah. I can't even remember where I went on vacation. Yeah.
Pollock and Thurston. And now this. So, yeah, because it doesn't feel like that long ago you were somewhere else in the world, but here we are.
A week ago, I was not here, Neil. I mean, you are the constant on these Friday shows, not me or Wade.
Wow.
We need Neil to help us get through it. Before we get to SmackDown, I do want to just tee up what is coming up this weekend. In addition to Collision Course on Saturday and the NWA podcast on Sunday, we're also releasing the latest edition of Postmarks with Bruce Lord and, David Myers. And they are going to be joined this month by Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. And here is a quick little sneak peek of Brandon Thurston on Postmarks this month.
It's really only in the last couple of years, I would say, that I've really been covering the legal stuff. And of late, that's really been even more interesting to me than the non-legal stuff, I would say. Maybe we're just in a particularly interesting time for legal wrestling stories. I think there's, the more I cover these things too, the more I learn about the law and how everything works and how to explain things. And I guess there's just not that many people out there who are going to figure that stuff out, even though you look at it and there's like dozens and dozens and dozens of aggregators who are covering this stuff and monetizing it. So it's maybe kind of surprising that there's not more effort to figure this out. But, and I think I am drawn also to recognize like where, I am actually contributing a unique, distinct value here that other people are not. So it encourages me to return to it.
In that chat, you will get the entire origin story of Brandon Thurston from El Gran Luchador of some sort, his days under a mask, his wrestling days into pro wrestling journalism and all things in between, how much wrestling he watches on a weekly basis, which is not a lot. But
surprisingly, I gather from Pollock and Thurston, he's not
Yes, but if you want to go, this is our VH1 Behind the Music with Brandon Thurston coming up on Saturday with David and Bruce. So
caught my eye, I must say, on the schedule this week, and it's one I'm really looking forward to. I feel like that clip encapsulates something about Brandon that, you know, on the show, he seems to, the show with you, he does display, I feel, an aptitude for the law. I think in another life, you could see him pounding the judge's desk, you know, and sort of shouting objection and whatnot.
Brandon and I have had our fair share of discussions in these stories with high-ranking lawyers who have made that same remark to Brandon that he may have missed his calling. So he is he has impressed some heavyweights out there in the legal field as well. So I do recommend you check out the interview. I got to listen to it earlier this week, so I think everyone will enjoy that one up on postwrestling.com. But tonight, Neil, we are going to the birthplace of one Kane from Spain. If you know, you know.
Yes.
But yes, it was SmackDown in Barcelona, Spain. I'm not going to do the perfect pronunciation of Barcelona, though I felt LA Knight took a stab at it. It's tough. It's like, I believe if you're trying, I'm not even going to try it because I'll get memed by
it. I think it's called the Castilian Lisp.
Yes.
Barcelona.
That's okay. I was glad you did it and not me for Brandon from New Jersey to clip that. But yes, I think Neil gave it more true, the true pronunciation. But yes, from Barcelona. And as I had mentioned, Neil, I think, say nothing else of like your Mania build and stuff, you are going to get some red hot crowds these next couple of weeks. And I think that this is going to be probably a set. Like sometimes we just get that one-off stop, maybe a Raw and SmackDown 1 week. But the fact that you're getting 3+ weeks of this, yeah. I think this is going to be remembered as like a pretty significant run of TV, just because I expect similar crowds these next couple of weeks in all these spots that, frankly, like never get WWE television.
Yeah, as we were reminded during the broadcast, I think they haven't been there for 16 years or something. There's never been a SmackDown there. So these underserved markets, yeah, they show up and they're loud. And I think it helps as a viewer to carry you through what might ordinarily be, you know, a fairly run-of-the-mill SmackDown.
A three-hour slog, yes.
Yeah.
And no better description than Joe Tessitore to welcome us to the first SmackDown in Spain. Known for its spectacular culinary scene, dynamic, expressive architecture, where the Mediterranean Sea meets old school charm. Read my mind. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, I don't know if the tourism sector was kicking in any extra points for Joe Tessitore's stay here in Barcelona, but man, was he just giving us a wonderful portrait of the city.
And it did look beautiful in those aerial shots that they showed. So.
Some very expressive architecture in the B-roll that they isolated. LA Knight comes out to start the show, having just won the United States title last week. And boy, is this this crowd in Spain just exhilarated to see the U.S. champion. And crowd's red hot. They're singing and dancing before Knight can even speak. And you just know this is going to be a great crowd all night long. He pumps up the first SmackDown in Barcelona. The title is back where it belongs, in Spain. And he is interrupted by Jimmy Uso, who is desperate on his road to WrestleMania, running short. I need to challenge you tonight. When the Bloodline comes out and Solo Sikoa, he's building up and you think he's going to demand he gets the title shot, but instead pivots that Jacob Fatu deserves the title shot. And here Solo Sikoa just gets tongue-tied. He might have been trying to say Barcelona. And even Jimmy caught him here as he gives him a smirk as he was trying to say failure of the family. And that was a lot of F's to get across.
Yeah,
here.
And it kind of came out as the F word. And then he went, oop.
Solo, like, yeah, kind of broke here too, as did Jimmy. And Jimmy calls Solo a failure for losing the Ulafala to Roman. And with that, Tama runs in with the hanging DDT, as they're calling it now, and they beat down Jimmy and LA Knight. Braun Strowman proceeds to come out to even it out. The babyfaces get the advantage, and Nick Aldis, never has the man ever booked a show to completion before it goes live to air, comes out, and suddenly we have a six-man tag opener. So great plot by Jimmy Uso to come out here for a title shot, and he leaves with a beatdown and a six-man tag.
Yeah.
Great work on his part.
I did enjoy the crowd, though. At first, I thought they were just doing a very standard football, ole, ole, and then realized, oh, I think they're doing LA, 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 LA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, this crowd was so loud. At times, it was almost hard to make out some of the chants, because I think they were, there were some in English, some just in Spanish, but it was so lively. It had that party atmosphere for the entire 3 hours.
And I think it may have put one or two of the performers off their stroke a little bit at the beginning. And Jimmy called it the U.S. tag title. He did, yeah. And then...
Don't give them any ideas.
There was also a moment where LA Knight got booed, and I had to rewind it to hear what it was he'd said. And he'd said, you know, we're making history for SmackDown in Barcelona. And then he said, he called the crowd, I think, Los Toros or something like that, and which means bullfighting, which is illegal in this part of Spain and is not at all popular with the younger demographic. So that's where the boos came in. So he was ill-advised, I think, to bring that up.
Bringing PBR over here for a weekend with WWE?
I don't think so.
So we get into the six-man tag, and early in the match we have the crowd's just, they're into everything the babyfaces do. Knight comes in with a neckbreaker DDT combo to Jacob Fatu, who kicks out at one and then does the leaping elbow off the top. BFT gets blocked, and then we get Charles Robinson gets distracted, and this allows Fatu the advantage. Heat on Knight, and then the big tag is made to Braun, who delivers the Strowman Express to all three on the floor. Crowd goes nuts. Jimmy hits the Tope Suicida, and then Braun with an avalanche and power slam. You guessed it, Tama Tonga eats the fall here, and the babyfaces get the win. However, Sokoa attacks Braun from behind, and Knight sends Sokoa and brawls with him over the barricade as Fatu super kicks Jimmy, attacks Braun, and hits him with three springboard moonsaults, leaving him laying. And this is sort of a pattern that we're seeing, and we would see again tonight with Drew McIntyre, of what they had started with Jacob Fatu in the past and done with Bronson Reed, the heel just laying out the babyface over and over and over again. And by the end of it is getting cheered. And that was the case here with Jacob Fatu just dismantling Braun Strowman. And at the end of this segment, it's Fatu going to leave. And then one more time, he sprints back and puts Braun into the timekeeper's area. So a big segment here on Jacob Fatu.
Yeah, I mean, he remains a popular figure with crowds in America and in Europe. And the crowd was kind of fickle throughout tonight. I mean, they were enjoying themselves so much that, and we'll get to it, but they seemed to take Drew McIntyre's, they seemed to just like waver on whether they liked or disliked Drew McIntyre at some stages. But putting over Jacob very strongly here, and it's his music that plays at the end of this segment, setting us up for something next week as well.
Then it was time to go to the empty arena earlier in the day. Kathy Kelly is sitting down with Jade Cargill after a big recap of all the drama with Jade, Naomi, and Bianca Belair, the big three. And Jade explains she's okay physically, she's ready to go, and calls Naomi pathetic, claiming to be the victim, and that Jade never needed a handout. And Kathy Kelly asks her, how are you so certain that it was Naomi that attacked you? And Jade calmly states, I recall being hit from behind and thrown onto a car and then seeing Naomi run away. It's like, oh, that's, you've pretty much got her dead to rights, I would say, that I saw her attack me. That was pretty strong evidence there. She says, she was one of my best friends. We were the big three. You attacked me physically, but you also attacked her integrity, her heart, and now I can't trust anyone. And then seeing Bianca team with her like nothing had happened, I knew I had to take things into my own hands. So she's not outright stating that she blames Bianca Belair, but this is introducing that she is not on the same page with Bianca because of her teaming with Naomi. With the question, was Belair aware of all of this right from the get-go?
And seeing before she passed out, seeing Naomi run away doesn't rule out the possibility of Bianca being a bit faster and running away first and not being seen. So, you know, there's still a little bit of doubt in all of this.
So she says, Naomi, she should have pushed me harder. and Liv and Raquel are entering the arena and start screaming with Jade. Liv complains about being falsely accused for weeks, and this leads to a challenge issued for next week. So we will see Jade Cargill against Liv next week, and Liv jokes about, I hope you don't get pushed onto any cars before then. So we will get this match coming up next week as we continue to move towards wherever this is ultimately culminating for WrestleMania. It would seem that Jade and Naomi paired together, and like Belair's off doing the title challenge.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I remain of the opinion that Jade shouldn't have got so much on Naomi last week. Naomi should have been allowed to escape through the crowd and not just be, you know, an injured, neck-braced Naomi taking the Jade. It felt a bit like, you know, there's no contest between these two. And in this segment, I enjoyed it. You know, I think it's good to pre-tape with Jade. I don't think she's quite on the... She's, you know, her presence is off the charts, but I'm not sure she's quite on the level of the other two members of the big three promo-wise. So it was probably wise to pre-tape it. And it went up a notch when Liv and Raquel walked in. I enjoyed that, you know, and Liv was correct. I mean, they were being falsely accused while Jade knew it wasn't them. So anyway.
And we never got an answer why Liv and Raquel even showed up at this arena.
That's true, yeah.
This is the only time we saw them, was earlier in the day arriving. Just, you know, catering was hot. I mean, maybe they had some delicacies from the dynamic cuisine of Barcelona.
Sure.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, we've got a review of the final night of the New Japan Cup with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. Rewind Away covers the Beatles 64 documentary from Disney+, a new edition of Talk, and the return of Book Club as Neil Flanagan and John Pollock chat Queen of the Ring by Jeff Lean. Plus, it is your home for all XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Go XL now at PostWrestlingCafe.com. Next up was Charlotte Flair against B-Fab, which they noted was a... So Charlotte, her only match back so far has been the Rumble. So this was technically her first singles match since December of 2023, taking on B-Fab here. And early on, Flair retreats to the floor. They go through the break, and Flair smashes her face into the mat using the head scissors and rotates her around. Flair then gets sent into the buckle after a figure eight attempt and is laid out with a spin kick in the corner and then a pump kick, which... partially landed, we will say. Flair then holds onto the rope, and she partially lands a super kick before the natural selection and figure eight for the submission victory. But interesting just to see the fact that they put B-Fab in this role and gave it like a decent amount of television time. I would say outside of the kicks that were a bit off, it was, you know, fine television match for Charlotte. It was more so about what was going to happen after.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it was more about what was going to happen after. But I think the selection of B-Fab for her first singles match in so long since the end of 23 was an interesting one. And it was fine. You know, B-Fab, they clearly want to do more with her. And, she I'm laughing because she had quite a good singles match, you know, several months ago. And I was doing the show with Wei and we were kind of, wow, this B-Fab.
Did we ever get a splitting up of B-Fab with the Street Profits?
Not a formal one, no.
They just kind of went their separate ways. B-Fab just, you know, she's gone from group to group and now she's on her own.
We assumed that they would probably split when the Profits turned heel, but then she appeared with them a couple of weeks later in a promo and then didn't after that. So, yeah, there was never any formal cheerio.
Well... we were about to get the brawl of all brawls here because Charlotte will not release the figure eight, which prompts Tiffany Stratton, who is just so furious at this figure eight being extended by several seconds, that she runs down furiously, fighting off security. Officials are out, and we just get a big, big pull apart. Flair yanks Stratton to the floor. I think we got multiple chants. I think there were some ECW chants in all of this, which I don't know if this conjured up ECW for me, but Stratton leaps off the steps, and then off the desk, Wade Barrett calls for a stun gun.
That's right.
He must have been watching Mariah May at Revolution. So then Stratton hits the first of several swan dives to everyone on the floor, and we think that the brawl has concluded. We go to break, we come back, and more to come with Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair. But first is Drew McIntyre in a produced video addressing the man that has benefited the most from him being screwed this past year, Damian Priest. And they put together, this was like Sherlock Holmes here, putting together all the pieces for the big climax of the movie, where we go back to WrestleMania 40, Damian Priest cashing in, then Punk screwing him at Clash at the Castle, allowing Priest to retain. Then Priest winning Money in the Bank, or Drew winning Money in the Bank and cashing it in, and once again getting screwed by Punk, and therefore Priest benefiting by retaining. And then it's Priest eliminating him from behind at the Royal Rumble, and then rolling him up from behind at Elimination Chamber. So, I mean, by the end of this, consider me swayed to Drew McIntyre's side here. I think this guy made a really compelling argument here. It's like, yeah, this Damian Priest has absolutely benefited off of your failures of this past year. And I like this video quite a bit.
Me too. I mean, it was only maybe 90 seconds or so, and it made a very compelling case. As you said, like the common denominator in all of these disasters for Drew is one Damian Priest. And I like the way he ended it with a death threat. You know, this isn't about world championships. This is about putting you down for good. You know, so.
Well, you know, we gotta pay back Damian somehow. So that's to the death they will go in Las Vegas. Papa John's is a sponsor. So we had footage of AJ Styles winning the title in 2017 from Jinder Mahal. Sure.
Weird, yeah.
Yeah.
Epic moments in SmackDown history with Papa John's integration.
The Miz is out for Miz TV. But before he can start, Stratton and Flair return to the arena, more brawling, and Joe Tessitore calls this a blonde bash in Barcelona, and culminates with Stratton leaping off the Videotron with another swan dive. So they were milking this brawl for all it was worth.
Another swan dive that hit everybody except Charlotte. But I mean, these things are what they are.
Do you expect to see any unruly behavior on St. Patrick's Day Monday and gentlemen swan diving off of pubs on Monday night?
I don't think so, no. Generally speaking, St. Patrick's Day is a much lesser big deal in Ireland than it is, especially in the US, places like Chicago where they dye the river green and all of that kind of thing. Do any of that. We just enjoy the day off.
Do you guys kind of like look down at the people who make such a big deal out of St. Patrick's Day when for...
Well, Finn Balor once accused somebody of being a plastic paddy, I think. I can't remember what the context of it, but it can be an insult for, you know, the...
It's like a rookie's night out.
Yeah, you know, I've run into on occasion, particularly in Dublin, US tourists who will regale you with stories of how they're 1/16th Irish and they're the great great grandfather, you know, hailed from Mayo, and you're supposed to be impressed by this, you know.
These morons. So Miz TV returns and Miz does his intro in Spanish. And says that Cody should have taken the Rock's offer. Instead, he got beaten up by two great rappers, Travis Scott and John Cena. So out comes Cody to a thunderous reaction, but Miz cuts his theme off to huge boos, stating, "I don't have time for sing-along with Cody. I've got to ask the hard-hitting questions. I've already been interrupted once." So Cody lays him out with a crossroads. And Cody says, "I only want to speak with John Cena. And John, if you can find time to come on Monday, I'll be there too." And that was it.
Yeah.
I was like, you can tell when I don't know what the big segment of SmackDown is going to be. I kind of just have to like throw a dart. And I went with the graphic tonight. I went with the Cody Miz TV segment. They did not have any. Cody did his promo last week. Then they brought him to Raw on Monday. He had nothing new to say on Monday. And tonight, they didn't even. It's like, we can't even go through just time fill here. We're just going to do a crossroads. I'm hoping this crowd got to see Cody maybe after the show went off the air, because this was just
they're lucky
segment.
Sure, they're lucky they had a nice pliable crowd here. I know that they got a bit annoyed later when they realized Roman wasn't there, but for this, you know, no Cena, they were fine to just start singing.
I mean, none of
Cody's
these guys were, like Reigns and Cena, none of them were advertised here, but just kind of we got Cody on the show, but we had no idea to do anything. So this became a promo for Raw. All this is with Shinsuke Nakamura earlier in the day warning him about misting a referee last week and said you could have been suspended. I was like, that literally is your job. That would be your call to suspend him. What do you mean? Like, you could have been suspended. You're telling us you're opting not to suspend the guy. So Damian Priest walks in asking where he is, referring to Drew, but he has left the building, which was a red flag. He has not left the building. And then Priest and Nakamura have words in two different languages, somehow ending in "let's fight later tonight." Nick, do you have any room in the schedule? Of course he does. And the match is going to be happening. Then maybe the most interesting, well, one of two interesting vignettes that ran on the show. The first, I think, being much more definitive of who this is. We see a mysterious masked figure scaling the top ropes, and this would appear to be Rey Fénix coming to SmackDown. And very interesting in the sense that, number one, it would appear that he is obviously main roster bound. But number two, if this is going to be a SmackDown talent, of the idea of maybe him and Penta are not paired together out of the gate, which some people have said, like, they would like to see these two kind of go separate routes, and you could always do the team up when the time is right as well.
Yeah, I heard Davey and Way both kind of take that tack in slightly different ways. Davey was an advocate for an NXT run, and Way did mention this possibility of keeping them on separate brands for a while. I'm for it as well, because Penta has been somewhat established as a singles competitor, you know, and a fairly strong force in the mid-card on Raw, so why not do the same for Fénix? And those who know, you know, will be, you know, very keen to see them paired up at some point.
Do you see him being introduced before WrestleMania? This is a very tough time to introduce new acts, but I mean, the fact that we're doing this, we've got just over a month before WrestleMania. I don't know how long they're going to run with these vignettes before you want to introduce them. They are free; like they can use them whenever they want to.
It's a tough time, you're right, but I think also they've got quite a lot of television to fill in run up still. So yeah, I think we'll see a debut before WrestleMania, and perhaps he'll be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal or something.
Look at that. Maybe he will ascend the throne, the Andre the Giant winner, Rey Fénix. Damian Priest against Shinsuke Nakamura. Priest is selling early and catches Nakamura off the middle turnbuckle with his elevated flatliner, manages the broken arrow, and then does the old school rope walk into the high cross that he's been introducing into his repertoire. Nakamura counters to an armbar, but Priest is out. They trade kicks, but then the straps come down, Neil. You know, it's business time now for Damian. As Drew appears ringside, Damian Priest is distracted. There's a roll-up by Nakamura for a two count. There was no way Nakamura was beating Priest. So then he sets up for the Kinshasa. Priest cuts him off with the South of Heaven when Drew attacks for the DQ. And from there, we get Priest he fights back, but then Drew goes to the eyes with the thumb, setting up a Kinshasa, and Drew and Nakamura have an understanding that Nakamura has laid out Priest for Drew to dismantle. So Drew continues his attack. Crowd is chanting for CM Punk, another big talent that was not going to be here tonight. Mm-hmm. And Drew hits him with the steps, and eventually the crowd starts singing for Drew. It's like, okay, this guy is not making a comeback. Drew's just murdering him. And then Priest struggles to his feet, and Drew is halfway up the ramp when he returns for a claymore, and he's cheered again and just yells, "On sight," and blames Priest for the last year of him having nothing, "so I will make your life a living hell," presumably by ending it.
Yeah, well, that's what he said earlier, so... Yeah, I did take a note that the crowd was quite fickle here, because we were told when they came back from break, and this wasn't even on the international broadcast, that Priest was having as you assume, because he's fluent in Spanish, was having a bit of fun with the crowd. So he very much started with the crowd behind him. But by the time he was being dominated by Drew, yeah, they were Seven Nation armying his name, you know, and singing it.
Yeah, well, they wanted back winners, and Priest was not going to give them any reason to get behind them. So, yeah, it was very reminiscent of the Jacob Fatu beatdown of Braun Strowman that we got twice on this show, and it seems to be a recurring formula for the company. So does Drew and Damian Priest, does that is an interesting program for Drew going into WrestleMania, or is this sort of like it's two pushed acts that, you know, this is the pairing that we're going with? It's a match.
I think it's the latter. It's kind of, well, we've got our title program set. Let's do this. I mean, Drew is great, and I like Priest as well. I think, you know, they're setting this up fairly nicely. There are a few more hot angles in the next few weeks of television, and yeah, it's a solid enough program for the middle of one of the two nights.
It felt to me like this will be a fine match, but I do feel like the video tonight, like, it really did tie things together really well, that this feels much more fleshed out than maybe when you first hear Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest, like what your thought would be in terms of this sort of just being two odd men out from the main event scene. But they did a good job tonight overall with this direction. We go to Kathy Kelly, who is with DIY, who state that the reason this is the best tag team division in the world is them. They made the Street Profits better, but they are second place. They don't want the smoke. They want to choke. And in walk the Machine Guns. They haven't forgotten about how DIY won the tag titles. There is unfinished business between them. After the break, Kathy Kelly speaks with Piper Niven and their new recruit, Alba Fire, with Chelsea Green. She has given clearance to speak with Chelsea through their earpieces. I don't know who is instructing them. And defends needing backup for situations she has been thrust into. Thus, Alba Fire was the secret weapon. Zelina Vega walks in, wants a title shot, but first she has to go through Piper Niven. So that's going to happen. But next week, you got to wait 7 days for Piper Niven and Zelina Vega.
Not much to say about this. I think they should have maybe debuted Alba Fire with the hoodie reveal here, because this crowd was loving everything, whereas it was crickets last week when we realized who the mystery assailant was.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Well, they were not crickets for this next appearance. Randy Orton, who I think was the most popular guy on this entire show.
Yeah.
He came out. First of all, he did his entrance at the beginning of the show, joined by his wife.
Yeah.
And he comes out. This entire arena is singing his theme, which it was quite the dedication to the man's song. And I mean, Randy Orton could have done like basic clotheslines for this whole match, and this crowd, they were going to eat. This was the perfect Randy Orton crowd. He was going to get the maximum out of a red hot crowd. And this ended up and Carmelo Hayes was a great opponent for him to just bump around. And I thought, just like, this almost felt like a night off for these two. And I mean that in a good way, just that like, there was no way this crowd was not going to just go nuts. And it was just, how's he going to hit the RKO? And that's exactly. They built this all around. Everything. They're screaming loudly for the 10 punches in the corner, counting in Spanish. Hayes gets dropped on the desk, and several times you see Randy teasing the RKO, but Hayes would roll out to the floor or he'd block it. Then Hayes manages, after Orton sidesteps nothing but net, Hayes hits a leaping springboard coming backward into a DDT. Orton then stops him on the buckle, hits the superplex, and after Hayes stops an RKO, hits the first 48, and then Randy just pops up and hits the RKO out of nowhere. So the first 48 had no effect on this man, and he pins Carmelo Hayes, but this crowd just went wild. And at the beginning of the match, Hayes had offered his hand, and then he pulled it back. So at the end of the match, Orton offers his hand, and Hayes pie faces him, so Orton just hits him with another RKO, teases the punt, which they are being very smart to continue to tease and tease. But Kevin Owens appears, pulling Hayes out of harm's way, and Orton just runs after Owens and ends up getting posted by Owens, who runs into the crowd. But this was probably the peak of this crowd, and Randy Orton felt like just a megastar on this show.
Absolutely. All he had to do was all the hits, the draping DDT, the RKO, and boom, you know. Probably notable, too, at the beginning of this, from a European standpoint, was Lamine Yamal, who's a 17-year-old wonder kid in European football, and he plays for Barcelona. They showed him on screen with his championship title, and the crowd went absolutely crazy for this guy. I mean, this is name your top US sort of sports prodigy. You know, I can't think of an equivalent because I'm not as knowledgeable about basketball or baseball or whatever.
Is he the Max Verstappen of this league?
Oh yeah, yeah. This guy is a bona fide, you know, star in the making. He's not even 18 and he's breaking records for scoring goals and assists for Barcelona, one of the best soccer teams in the world, and the Spanish national team as well. So it was a good get for them from the European point of view.
Oh, okay. I'm glad that you could fill in the blanks here. Have you entered the F1 Fantasy League?
I haven't, John, and I've got a terrible admission. F1 has been a part of like UK and Irish culture for as long as I can remember. It was on free-to-air television all through my youth, and I never, ever got into it. And I gave it another go when Drive to Survive started on Netflix, and I didn't even make it through the first season of Drive to Survive. It's just, for some reason or other, it's never really caught my imagination. So I'm the wrong guy to talk about. You need to get Chris Elliott on or somebody like that who can give you chapter and verse on F1.
Yes, I have actually not joined either. And as I have logged in, I believe I have 3 hours and 4 minutes until the deadline. So I might have to do that after this show. I am reinvigorated in F1 after taking a season off. So
that's good.
Yeah, we have the big Australian Grand Prix Saturday night, Neil, if you ever want to just dive in head first. But first, we go to the Bloodline, who are reacting. They react to the attack earlier tonight, and Jacob Fatu challenges Braun for next week. And anytime they promoted anything for next week, you got groans from this crowd who just they're not going to Italy. Then we got our next vignette, and this one a little more left for interpretation, but it was kind of just this atmosphere of smoke and then reveals the number 4. So a lot of people are thinking this is an Aleister Black hint. Yeah. That seemed to be the prevailing thought. Could be very possible, but more ambiguous than the last one.
Very ambiguous and hard to say, but I suppose we do know he's on the way, and it kind of has that look of, you know, darkness. Yes. And all the rest of it. Are they going to put him back in the room?
That's the first thing I thought of with this vignette. I was like, oh, please just show up in that room. I will be so happy to reintroduce those promo reciting. Gunther comes out calling himself the greatest European wrestler, and he is here to prove a point because you fans love Jay. He's busy dancing, but when the bell rings, no substance. And he mentions that here in Spain, there is a kid. Mm-hmm. And the whole crowd, I won't say the whole crowd, enough of them, they all knew what he meant by this, which is quite something. And yeah, says that this guy thinks he's the best wrestler in Spain. Well, I'm going to prove that doesn't mean a damn thing. And he brings out Axiom. And this is like, I'm watching live by this point, so this was an unannounced match, obviously. I was like, this is going to be awesome. However long this goes, this is going to be tremendous, and this did not disappoint. So it's a non-title match, and like the biggest match of quite the week for Axiom, doing the Hardys match on Tuesday, and then this with Gunther on Friday. And this crowd, I mean, I still think Randy Orton was the hottest star on this show, but Axiom was pretty damn close here. So they are just so into this, like the underdog story here against Apollo Creed for all intents and purposes. And Axiom got a lot in this match. He goes for a Suzuki armbar early on. He's delivering kicks, and Gunther, he rips at the mask, lands a missile drop kick, and then it's Axiom avoiding a power bomb, and he gets this inside cradle. Gunther kicks out, and this crowd, they were like, yes, Axiom could beat Gunther here. And Axiom hits a big flying knee, but is met with a shotgun blast, and then Big powerbomb by Gunther. He stacks him. Axiom kicks out, and the crowd just goes insane. Gunther gets stopped on the turnbuckle. Rana gets blocked, but then Gunther's powerbomb gets countered with a Rana, and Axiom hits the golden ratio for the big near fall of the match. Axiom tries for a Fujiwara. It's broken with a powerbomb, big lariat, and one more powerbomb as he stacks Axiom. Gunther was amazing in this match. Axiom was amazing in this match. This was my favorite thing on the show. I just thought this was awesome. It was a great use of Axiom. This crowd was amazing. And Gunther was such... He gave Axiom, like, plenty in this match while still the outcome you need to be doing in, like, this build toward Jey Uso. But I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, we're on the same page here, John. This was easily my favorite part of the show. And like yourself, when it became obvious that we're going to get this match from these two NXT UK alums, I knew it was going to be a banger, and it was. Very glad to see Axiom get so much in this match as well. So much so that the crowd who were, you know, we've talked about the crowd, but like they were convinced by some of the near falls.
Oh, yeah, like that inside cradle, and man, the life that they had in Axiom when he kicked out of the one power bomb. I liked it a lot, and I continue to enjoy that Gunther, it's like he's got this wide variety of ways he can win. He can win with the splash, he can win with the rear naked choke, he can win with the power bomb. It's like it's not just the one formula that he has to rely on. After the match, he applies the sleeper onto Axiom, and the officials are running in. No Jay on this show, so it's Gunther just leaving Axiom for dead, but quite the segment to go out of your way to see just I thought the rare instance of, you know, you beat the hometown guy, but it was done in such a way that Axiom got a lot out of this, and it was just a really fun television match. Then it's they recap Roman Reigns' return on Monday, and that prompts Paul Heyman out in the ring proclaiming today as Roman Reigns Day. Why? Because 2K25 has been released, and he encourages people to go play the game, but not until SmackDown ends, so the ratings stay high. We know how that third hour tends to perform. And he brings up CM Punk, but it's not his day, and it will definitely never be Seth Rollins' day. I guess to mean, like, they're not going to be on the cover of any video games. Okay. The crowd starts humming Rollins' theme, and Heyman says how much he hates that song. And he says if anyone has a problem with Roman Reigns, they can say it to his face next week in Bologna, Italy. And this got so many boos from this crowd as Heyman says, what? It's a cheap flight to Italy. It's not like Mussolini is sitting there not allowing you to cross the border, which I will say in terms of like improvising a line and just having a dictator off the top of your head. I thought Heyman was pretty on point here. But this was a pretty pointless segment overall, but beyond just, hey, Roman's going to be on the show, but next week and buy the video game.
And buy our video game. Yeah, that's all I could get from this. And I forgot. Sorry, I should have started the show by wishing you a happy Roman Reigns Day, John.
Yeah,
all who celebrate.
Oh, man. I thought maybe we were going to get an announcement it was Rusev Day by the end of this. Maybe that would be the other vignette. So next week, beyond Roman Reigns appearing, it's Jacob Fatu against Braun Strowman, Zelina Vega against Piper Niven, and Liv Morgan against Jade Cargill in Italy. Street Profits are getting ready. Legado del Fantasma, wish them luck because they want to take the titles off of them. It really does feel we're getting like the whole five-man tag team match at WrestleMania, whether it be with a ladder match stipulation or just a five-way. But it's everything is building to these five teams squaring off for these tag titles is what it feels like we're going toward.
I think so. I did have a takeaway, though, from these segments where, you know, Machine Guns and then... here is, you know, they're threatening to take the titles if the people they're speaking to win, but Pretty Deadly have already grabbed the number one contender spot.
Well, they explain Pretty Deadly get the next shot, but then you have Los Garza after the Street Profits, and then you have the Machine Guns wanting to go if DIY win.
Yeah,
I think this is all everyone is going to have like their
okay.
There, we're going to go back to that Nick Aldis graph from last week on the whiteboard, and I just think we're going to just get the five-way at the end of all of these various combinations we'll get over several weeks.
Sure.
Gunther meets Jimmy Uso and says, "You are more mature than Jay." Gunther reveals, "I have a younger brother, and I know you're twins, but you're much more mature." He says, I left Axiom laying like a wet towel, and I will have to do the same to Jay. And he's encouraging Jimmy, maybe you can tell Jay to make the right decision. I guess to just give up this match at WrestleMania. Like,
yeah,
seems like a likely scenario. Jimmy says that Jay is going to beat him for the belt, and Gunther mistook his maturity. And he says, I tried. So I think Jimmy is going to get destroyed before WrestleMania one of these weeks.
I'm afraid so. It looks like it. Yeah, Jimmy is not in a very enviable spot at this point, at least, I think, until we're through WrestleMania.
I actually kind of like that story of Jay having like the biggest night of his life and Jimmy doesn't even get a spot at WrestleMania, and that you can play off of that somewhere down the line, potentially. Because there's nothing obvious for Jimmy on this show, and nor I think are people clamoring for something big for Jimmy either.
I think my issue at least would be they had such a stinker together that if Jimmy is sort of infected by jealousy over all of this in the end, I don't know if too many people are calling for a Jimmy versus Jay program again, but I would also assume, though, that the two of them would want to put that right at some point.
I think at some point, just given where Jay is now, I think it's just inevitable we will probably revisit that, and they probably want that do-over as well. But the main event is DIY and the Street Profits for the tag titles. And this crowd, hey, 3 hours in, they're still really up. And first, Pretty Deadly, they're shown several times watching in the back. They get the heat on Montez Ford. He fights the fairy tale ending, makes the big tag to Dawkins, who does his big usual comeback, spinning splash, silencer. And then Ford goes for a 450, landing on Ciampa's knees as DIY manage the Shatter Machine. Pounce sends Ciampa into the timekeeper's area, and then Gargano's one final beat gets caught in mid-move by a silencer from Dawkins. So Gargano is lifted up on the shoulders, and they go for the Doomsday Blockbuster, but he rolls back, almost like setting up for a Poison Rana, and Ford takes out Ciampa and then returns to the top turnbuckle, and they hit the Blockbuster onto Gargano, and Ciampa dives in for the save. And the close comes after Dawson misses a Swanton. There's a fairy tale ending super kick combo that takes Dawkins out of the mix. They go for Meet in the Middle. They miss with Gargano super kicking Ciampa, and Dawkins returns with a spine buster, setting up From the Heavens as Ford lands it on Gargano, pins him, and the Street Profits win the tag titles. Mm-hmm. And we get some expensive fireworks to end the show in Barcelona.
And a new reign here in Spain, as I think Joe Tessa.
Oh, boy, you were sitting on that one.
Well, that's Joe Tessitore takes the credit for that one.
Oh, I think okay. He said you could have really stolen credit for that one. I would have missed it. But yes, you got a big title change at the end of this show. It sent this crowd home with something to remember by this show. But overall, like I thought, I will still say these 3 hour shows, I don't care what time of the day it is, I really do feel that third hour, but I mean, this crowd was red hot. I really enjoyed, like, the Orton stuff was the Orton match with Carmelo Hayes was a lot of fun. Gunther and Axiom was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Main event, it was a very good tag match that they had. So yeah. this was on the upper level of 3 hour SmackDowns for me, at least.
I agree. The crowd doing a lot of the heavy lifting in that as well. And for me, the highlight being Gunther and Axiom. But when you peel away all of that, these 3 hour SmackDowns are still a little bit brutal. You know, I think it will help in the next few weeks that they're in Europe. So we're going to get hot crowds and hopefully a bit of an earlier jump at this, John, on a Friday night to do the review. But roll on, June. And I really hope, like you do, that this doesn't roll around again at the beginning of next year for any reason, that this 3 hour experiment, it's, the ratings are doing well, but the show as a viewer, it's just too long.
We will encourage anyone that wants to jump on. We will be taking calls, so you can jump into the room before we say farewell to all of the people on the free stream. But we will just go over that Monday, they are in Brussels, Belgium, which features the first appearance of John Cena since the turn at Elimination Chamber. The online world is aghast that apparently the man has covered up the bald spot, so we could be getting a brand new John Cena with some hair restoration with this new run. What are you expecting for Monday's Raw with John Cena, and are you intrigued by what the kickoff for this heel run is going to resemble on Monday?
I'm very intrigued because I haven't run through the possibilities in my mind of his motivation for, you know, aligning with The Rock and turning heel. So I think it's just going to be very interesting if it's something that he can put his acting chops to some good use on, and that makes a bit of sense, because, you know, that's what we want. You know, everybody was aghast at the actual heel turn, but now they need to make it make sense. And I think, I'm sure they will. I'm sure that they've workshopped any number of stories as to, you know, why, John, why, you know. So I am looking forward to that.
So that's Monday in Belgium. And then next Friday, they're in Bologna, Italy, and Future TV's in Glasgow, Scotland, London, England, at the O2 Arena for SmackDown and Raw. They are doing TV's at the O2 Arena. And then they're not back in the States until April 4th with a big show in Chicago at the Allstate Arena. So a lot of big shows coming up in the lead up to WrestleMania. So we will bid farewell to all of the people on the free feed. Again, if you want to go XL, you can do so at postwrestlingcafe.com. We are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So we will be back Monday night with the birthday man himself. But we will say goodbye to you. But for those on the cafe, we're just going to keep moving.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.